Well, welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Bridget Tyer, and I am lucky to be joined, as always, by my co-host, collaborator, and good friend, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, say hello to folks and tell them how you're doing.
Hi, everyone. Doing great today. Actually, really looking forward to our conversation today. Highly curious about it. When Bridget and myself were chatting about this before we hit record, she shared with me an inspiration for why we're dealing with the topic we are today. So maybe a good way to start today, Bridget, is sharing with our listeners, what is it about this topic that you got a recent inspiration for?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So, you know, of course, the title today is Minding Your ABCs, the five fundamental needs of humans at work. And so I had a coaching session recently with a client. Shout out to this client. You know who you are. And towards the end of the session, he said something, can't remember what it was, and it just provoked me to share with him these five fundamental needs. And I stated what they were, and I said a little bit about them. And he paused, and he said, gosh, everybody should know what those are, but I don't think they do. He's like, the managers I work with, I don't think they know about these necessarily. And I don't think I have really done a great job paying attention to them, maybe until recently. You know, he was saying I've gotten better, but I mean, I didn't know about these things. And then he paused and he said something else, which really stayed with me. He said, you know, though, my wife was intuitively good at these things. And I know that because when I reflect on how she raised our kids, she was being mindful of these. I don't know how she knew them, but she did. I wasn't very good at them, so thank goodness she was. And I thought it was lovely that he recognized her skillfulness and the difference it made in the family. So while we are talking about these through the lens of the workplace, they apply to any relationship system. They're fundamental human needs when we engage with other humans. And when these needs are sufficiently met in the workplace, employees are just able to bring their best selves to work. You know, they're naturally motivated. They're more optimistic. They're more engaged. They're more committed. And then, you know, conversely, when one or more of these core needs is being thwarted, they become very frustrated. We all do. And we become more reactive, and eventually we become resigned. And this is what I want our listeners to hear, that this is where the seeds of resignation are planted, whether that's resigning in place or actually leaving, right? But it doesn't have to be that way. So Irvin, without further ado, why don't you share with folks what the ABCs stand for?
Yeah, everybody's like, what are these ABCs? Well, we are actually using ABCs as an acronym to remember our five core needs. And you scratch your head and said, well, wait a minute, Irvin, ABCs has only got four. Where's the five? And I said, actually, because we're having two core needs beginning with C. So it's A, B, C squared, S. Big shout out to Thomasina Williams. Thomasina was one of our certified coach people in resilient leadership. She went through the course and she was debating this and they were thinking about this, came up with this useful acronym for recalling them. And I think it's wonderful. So, okay, without much ado, I said, what are the ABCs? Well, approval is your A. B is belonging. C is control. Your second C is certainty. And S is safety. And if you are a human being, and chances are, if you're listening, you are, these are essential needs for your ability to flourish. We flourish as human beings when these five core needs, to some extent, are met. And it's not that we're consciously seeking these. You don't go into work saying, oh, today I need a little bit of belonging and some more safety. But these are, you know, ticking constantly below the surface. And how you interact with your team and how they perceive their core needs being met is impacting every interaction and impacting the outcome.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because while they are so fundamental and impacting us, right? I said earlier that my client's observation was, huh, I didn't know about these. I didn't get taught these. And I don't think my fellow peers did either. And I agree with them. I don't think most people are that aware of them. And certainly managers don't typically get taught to be mindful of these. Do you agree, Irvin?
I do. I think there are some which we perhaps intuitively do well. Like I remember when I was a manager, I think I did belonging well. I just have a very friendly persona. I know the importance of welcome, of people feeling welcome. So I didn't call it, oh, I'm making people feel belong. I just did that.
I could see that.
But then there's others that I didn't think about. Like one I would say is certainty. And that my tolerance for risk, my tolerance for change is pretty high. And I didn't appreciate that for other people, that makes them feel very uncomfortable. And so therefore, I got myself into trouble at times because I really feel that people didn't have the certainty. They didn't feel that. And that really impacted some of the interactions. And and so therefore, I think managers really are not thinking about these, but they are bubbling. So they are below the surface. And I think that this can really help them understand perhaps some of the reactions they're experiencing or perhaps some of their own reactions as things come up during the day.
Yeah. And I like how you shared with folks what you were intuitively good at and what you maybe weren't so mindful of, because that's what I would invite our listeners to do now. We're going to go through the, you know, the five needs. And so think about, as you're listening to our conversation, which of these are you intuitively good at? Because undoubtedly you are. And then, you know, which one or two are you like, you know, I don't really pay attention to that too much. And what is the impact and what would be possible for your team in terms of greater productivity and engagement if you were more deliberate in those areas? So, all right, so let's start at the top. A is for approval, like you said. And Irvin, you know, what, how would you define this core need? Because I can hear in the heads of some of our listeners them saying, I don't need approval. But again, everybody has approval needs if you got a beating heart. So what do we mean by that? And I don't know, just top of mind, what are some ways, effective ways that leaders can meet that human need?
Yeah. So, I mean, at its very core, the need for approval is about feeling valued and respected for what we bring to the table and to be appreciated for our contributions. Mm-hmm. And I don't care who you are, at some sense, you need that. Throughout our lives, you know, we can think of in school, our first job, you know, or as we go up the leadership ladder at work. Mm-hmm. Every one of us has this fundamental need to be seen and appreciated. Now, what we need may shift over time, but what doesn't shift is that core need.
Right.
This really ties into research around engagement. And there's an interesting correlation between lower engagement and feeling recognized and appreciated.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, it just shows that people are actively looking for another job if they don't feel in some way that their approval needs are being met.
Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't it just about being seen and heard and valued, right? And like, there's nobody who's like, I don't need any of that.
Yep. That's just- yep.
So basic.
So then how does this leader says, okay, that I want to do this. What are some techniques or what are some ways they might be able to give approval to a person?
So there's a couple, and one of them is just so basic, and that is really being present and listening actively when you are with an employee. People just know when you're there and they know when you're not. And when you're distracted and you're not listening, and you're rushed and you're thinking about anything except for the human being in front of you, that telegraphs a certain message, you know, I don't value you right now. And of course, that's not what you meant and that's not what you intend. But leaders, as they go up the organizational ladder, become worse at listening. The research is very clear on this. So if you want to engage more of your employees' best thinking and their level of commitment, just pay attention to listening better, right?
Yeah.
And being present. But of course, positive feedback is a good one that is very specific and genuine. Not to generalize, wow, great job, but really thoughtful, specific feedback that lets that employee know you see them. I think that's That's the key. And then I'm thinking of a client of mine who was so good at this in terms of just expressing appreciation for a job well done or for a contribution. And he would write every year handwritten notes. Mm-hmm. He wrote, I don't know, he told me one time, I think it might have been like 150 or something like that. I got one. This was a client of mine who I was coaching, and I got this handwritten note and I saved it. It's in my desk drawer. I felt so deeply appreciated and valued. So, you know, that's what first came to my mind. I don't know, anything to add?
I just had one other thing would be, I think if we can take the time to ask some great questions rather than telling employees, because I think when we ask questions, I think the below the surface, a person feels, well, they're genuinely looking for my input. Why are they asking this question? Because I have something to offer. So I think that can signal as well a way.
Yeah, you know what? I heard this the other day. Oh, I'm sorry. This just came right to the forefront of my mind the other day. I heard this and I can't remember where, but somebody said, asking someone a genuine question is one of the biggest signs of respect.
Love it.
I don't know where I read that. I just read it, but isn't that so true?
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. So A is approval. B is belonging. And curious, Bridget, what do you think that's about? What do you think that core need is?
Yeah, I really think that's all about feeling connected. And more specifically than that, it's like being part of the tribe, you know, feeling like you're part of something bigger than yourself, because belonging needs are just part of our DNA. And I think from an evolutionary standpoint, belonging helped us survive, right? You were inside the group, inside the tribe, you were protected. If you were left on the outskirts, you weren't. And so we have a very genuine need to feel like we are part of something beyond just ourselves, a group of like-minded people, right? Or part of a larger purpose. And managers who can tap into this basic need, I think what they're able to do is create a sense of esprit de corps within their workplace, right? Where the teams are greater than the sum of their parts. They're tapping into this core fundamental need. And so do you, Irvin, like when I say that, do you have an example of somebody that you worked with who you think was good at this, meeting this need?
Yeah, I remember I worked with a leader who was so especially good at being very mindful of who had spoken and hadn't spoken in a room. And just was very mindful that some people took a lot of the airtime and others didn't. And she just had a beautiful way of just inviting and making sure that every voice was heard. And in that, it was that you belong here. You have a right to be here. Your voice is just as important. We may not hear it as often, but that's important. And so it was just this monitoring of around the room, of making sure that everyone who sat at the table actually felt part of the table. And I think that's kind of belonging there is very much, because that then instills a little bit of confidence, and then people move to build on that confidence to really get involved.
What an elegant example, because it's so simple, but it's just so, I don't know, it just strikes me as like, of course, that would really help, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so often we don't, because in the busyness, we don't notice that, but she took time to notice who was speaking, who wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. All right. So that's belonging. There are other ways, you know, to engender that, but let's talk about the next one, which is control, the first C, control. That's a big one for leaders. Leaders like to exercise control. They like to be in control or they wouldn't be leaders. And they hate it when they're not, or they feel like control is slipping from them. So I'm curious, Irvin, what would you share about that as a core fundamental need at work?
Yeah, this one is really interesting because I think we live in a world which, and we've described this before, is so fast, and so many things are happening that seem to be beyond our control, events, etc. And so I think all of us can relate that we just don't like to feel out of control, and especially, as you said, in leadership. And just because of the responsibility we want, we crave actually to be in control of our day, our week, and our work. And I think there's a relationship going on here between control and our autonomy. And that is, I want to have a say in what I do, when I do it, how I do it. But if we feel that the circumstances are taking over and we're losing our own autonomy, then that's really difficult for many people. And, you know, how does that show up? I think whenever we feel that we're losing control at work, it's so instinctive. We may not notice it, but it's instinctive that we try to reinsert ourselves. And maybe we take control of that which we can to compensate these other areas that we can't control. And what does that look like? Well, it starts to look like micromanagement. Maybe I can micromanage an employee because I know I can control that relationship. Or else we overfunction as part of a team, or we try and regain the sense of control. And the problem is then that we create a problem even worse than itself, because then people feel that overbearing as well. The corrective almost is worse as well. Does that resonate with you, Bridget?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, here's how these fundamental needs work. If they aren't being met, then we're going to do something to get them met. But usually we're reacting unconsciously. We're not like saying, oh, what could I do thoughtfully here to gain more control? We're feeling out of control and we react to regain it. And oftentimes in ways that are just like you described. We become more controlling. Why? Because we feel out of control. But then we feel even more out of control because nobody likes to be controlled. And by the way, you can't control people and outcomes anyway. I don't know, Irvin, like when you were leading an organization, did you ever feel, can you think of a time when you felt like you were losing some control and kind of how you reacted to that?
Yeah. I mean, I can remember earlier in my career, we were dependent on a lot of government grants, and that's lovely when it's going well, but then sometimes it just can disappear overnight. And I can remember a couple of different things that impacted our funding, and it was a sense of that I'd lost control about it. And I can just remember this, I think, responsibility I felt. To reassert control, to save face, and to that this is under control, etc. And then I can remember I overdid it. I kind of, you know, got very controlling in the meeting, and I very prescriptive on what we had to do, when it would have been perfect for me to be a little honest and then said, we're in this together, give me some ideas. I felt I had to reassert control and be prescriptive rather than being vulnerable and open to different ideas.
You know, what our leaders don't see, which I see because we're recording this face to face, is that you put your hands up in the air like you're grabbing the reins. And that's what we do when we reassert in a reactive way. It's like, let me get those reins and pull them in tight, you know?
Yeah.
And so obviously that is counterproductive. So, you know, what would you say, Irvin, is a more like, if we do feel we are losing control of a situation, a project, an outcome, what are some thoughtful ways to get that need met?
Yeah. So I think it is kind of what I should have done there. And that is, I think we actually invite more listening. We invite more input. And I think that really gives a sense of, I think there's two things going on there. One is that as leaders, we can listen in a new way and really appreciate some of the input and come up with ideas that we hadn't before. But then I say, secondly, it adds a greater calm around us that people actually feel that their sense of having control in a situation is being honored, that their ideas are being honored, and that we're in this together. Yeah. And that we can collectively come up with a plan as well and keep everyone in the loop. And that's the other thing. If change is coming, keep people in the loop. Don't hide stuff. I find it always ends up in disaster. Mm-hmm. I think we underestimate people's ability to deal with stuff that's coming. If we just give people the knowledge that it's coming, they feel in the loop and they feel at least they've been honored enough to have this information that they can plan something about.
Yeah, that I really wonder. I want to underscore, because I think one of the ways that we as managers sometimes feel we've lost control is when the people above us announce things that we're taken surprised by, like you're saying, or maybe go to our employees with something and we weren't brought in the loop, right? So again, what happens is nobody intends to thwart one of these needs, you know, that it just gets frustrated. And we're just trying to share with listeners how to be mindful of these, because if we don't pay attention to them, we invite frustration, resistance, and resignation.
Yeah, totally.
And we don't need to. We don't have to.
Totally. Well, I think a close cousin of what that first C, control, is also certainty, because I think some of the background that we talked about with control is in this world we're living in of constant change and things coming up. Well, of course, one of the things that comes up in our world as well is that there's nothing really that can be taken for certain anymore. Every day is a new day. And in some way, it's very hard. It's constantly changing. So I'm curious, taking that background, Bridget, what would you want to share with about this core need for certainty?
Yeah, well, as we have said before, that uncertainty breeds anxiety and reactivity in the workplace. And yet, what is so challenging for managers, as you're saying, is that they often can't give employees the certainty they crave, in the sense of they don't have all the answers and they can't make everything be fully predictable for employees. They just can't. Yeah. But you know what they can do? They can provide clarity. And I would say to our listeners that work on being even clearer than you are right now, and that will provide more certainty. And, you know, what do we mean? Well, clarity about your expectations. That creates predictability. Clarity about roles and responsibilities. Oh, okay. Now I know what I'm responsible for and what I'm not responsible for. So I can predict what next week is going to look like better, right? Clarity around where are we headed together and what are our priorities. Continually try to create a clearer picture. And what you will see is employees will settle, their nervous systems will settle, and then they'll engage and execute better. And to me, that's the best way to create certainty. I don't know. Would you agree with that? Or do you have anything to add?
I do. And actually, I think there's a link between that and our final, Courtney, because I think whenever you're able to name all of these things that create a sense of security, it kind of brings up the final S, which is safety. Because I think that instills within us a sense that things will be okay, that I'm going to be safe, that because I know X, Y, and Z, because I know my input is going to be respected, because I know all these different things, that just creates safety. And sometimes, you know, the term psychological safety has been bantered around today. It's a very popular term. It's the same thing. It's exactly this concept, this core need of feeling safe. And I think, you know, what's at the core of this is that we are safe enough to have some risk taking, an interpersonal risk taking, really, where we feel comfortable speaking up, asking questions, admitting mistakes, offering new ideas. And we do that because we do not fear being embarrassed. We don't fear punishment, but rather it's being openly invited. And because of that open invitation, we're able to take the risk. And because of that, we feel safer. And of course, this notion of psychological safety is being popularized by Amy Edmondson. And one of her core findings were that teams with high psychological safety were the teams that tended to be more innovative and perform better. And that just makes sense. You know, innovation is about taking risk. Innovation is about new ideas. And of course, if you feel safe enough to raise those new ideas, you're going to be more innovative. And I think what's the core thing here? Well, I mentioned it earlier, it's vulnerability. To the extent that a leader can be vulnerable, admit their own mistakes, invite input, appreciate kind of the feedback, address maybe some behaviors that were disrespectful, that really then creates a culture of trust and open dialogue.
Yeah.
And these are all interrelated. They're not five disparate core needs. They're all in, and I think you can see here how safety is absolutely, you know, the sense of belonging is related to safety. The sense of control is related to safety. So all of them are all very much interrelated. Anything you'd add, Bridget, there?
No, I just want to underscore the whole thing about not tolerating disrespectful behavior. Mm. Now, of course, the folks listening are not usually the culprits of this rude or disrespectful behavior. They probably wouldn't be tuning in, but they may have on their team somebody who is like this. And if they put up with it and they do not speak to that person and nip it in the bud and coach that person, say, you, when you do this, when you interrupt people repeatedly, or when you say this, it sounds like you're dismissing people's expertise, and I'm sure you don't realize it. Yeah. If those conversations don't happen, then psychological safety on that team goes way down, even though you're not doing it, you're tolerating it.
Yeah.
Now, I would just say, don't do that. Do not allow people to create an environment on your team that diminishes the ability of that team to function at its highest level.
You know, such a great discussion today. And maybe a practice for our listeners to take from this is the next time you're in a conversation that doesn't go well, or you come out of a meeting and you think, what happened there? And we tend to break it apart and we kind of like, well, she said this and he said that and I should have said this. Just instead of going into that kind of analysis, just sit back and say, I wonder which ABCs are in play here. And it's a lovely way of just kind of zooming out and seeing a bigger picture. Is this something about approval? Is it something about belonging or maybe control, certainty, or safety? And maybe it's two or three things.
Yeah.
And that's a way, you know, very often we're in the midst of something happening. It's very hard to see these core needs playing out. But when we kind of take time, sit back and say, which core need is interacting here? What's this all about? I think that can give you some really great insight about how to react, how to manage situations as well. Because so often, as we said at the beginning, these are invisible at times. We're not really consciously aware that they're happening. But when you zoom back and take a little time, it's like, whoa, yes, they are there.
I love that. That's kind of using the rear view mirror approach, right? To better understand this. And then what I would add to that is, let's say you have a weekly team meeting, and most managers have some regular rhythm to their team meetings. Put ABCs squared at the top of your agenda. Once the agenda is set, just take a few minutes to think about, in this meeting, how can I pay attention to these things? Is there an opportunity for me to give some explicit positive feedback to the team and meet some of those approval needs? Is there a place where I might get a little controlling, and how can I let go of the reins a bit and let folks participate more? Right? So we do it on both ends, in hindsight and proactively.
Love that. Love that. Well, I don't know about you, Bridget, but I've really got a lot of food from thought in this conversation. I hope our listeners have too. We brought you back to the ABCs, and it's a wonderful way to kind of really explore what's bubbling below the surface at times. And a reminder as human beings that we have core needs and we need those needs to be met. And they are happening at work. They're also happening at home as well. So thank you for a great discussion today, Bridget. Listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share with others. And we look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Bye now.
Take care.